Blog Talk Radio.
That would be Timber Lake.
All right. My bad. I'm sorry.
How you doing?
I'm so sexy.
Yeah, sexy back.
Right. I'm bringing my sexy, my sexy back. I'm so out of touch.
So, do you want to go there? Since you're bringing it up?
No. Because you're already fired up, and I don't want you to, no.
I'm going to bring it up, because what you said was hilarious. So, America, I got sent a link to a YouTube video for this male stripper who calls himself Extension, because he has an extension. He's from Jamaican cat that dances in New York. Now, yes, his extension is an extension. I will give the brother that. But I was not at all moved by his performance. I mean, his face was kind of cracked. And he had a nice body. But he was dancing all weird. And, you know, I've been to a strip club once or twice, not in a long time. But he was kind of like pop-locking and grabbing his penis, and I was like, I'm just not even interested in that. And then, what did you say?
I said, I don't think that is an appropriate comment for this radio show.
That's not what you said. He said that when he takes a shower, he throws dollar bills at the window, at the mirror, because that's how sexy he is, and that cracked me up. Because it just came out of nowhere.
That's true. I'm so sexy. I want to throw myself. I make it rain in my own bedroom.
And so, wait. Okay. So we've got really important things to talk about, but I just want to finish this thought. So when I was looking at that video, I saw other videos, so I started checking them out. And it seems like that's the thing now. They kind of like, they do this pop-locking thing, and they squat down like they're driving a car and whatnot. And there's this one cat, I think his name is, I want to say Rollo, but I think that was Sanford and Son's best friend. But it's like Rollo or Rollo or something like that. He actually, so the women come up to him with this, like this fan of money, and just one at a time, poof, 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 just throw the money at him one at a time real quick. And I don't know if that's code for something, because this one chick came up, and I don't know, maybe she had like $51 bills, and she came up to his face and just real quick, and then took a dollar bill, rubbed it down his chest, and reached into his underwear and put it in there. And then next thing I know, and this is public, he's got her up against a chair and it's doing all kinds of clothed, but stuff that needs to be done in the bedroom, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, first of all, I wouldn't be caught in public doing that, number one. I didn't say nothing about private, but definitely not in public. But two, I said, you know what, if the situation were reversed, men would be catching a case.
What? I don't. Huh?
If
how are we under the bus this morning?
No. What I'm saying is, if the stripper had been a woman,
mm-hmm.
and a man from the audience did to her what the female audience did to the male stripper,
mm-hmm.
the male audience would have caught a case. He would have been bounced out of there and thrown in jail for disorderly conduct and public almost nudity. But when it's a guy as a stripper, he can, you know, like, I can't really repeat everything he was doing. But it was not for primetime viewing.
Well, let me
now,
just
you
say,
know that,
because since I've never gone to a strip club, and I'm not under oath, I understand there's a difference in how women react in a strip club and how men react in a strip club. And I understand that when women are in a male stripper's club, it's like a review. And everyone is dancing and jumping up and down, and the women
are
screaming.
No, honey, it's like an
out.
Orgy. It's
right.
like an
it's
orgy.
It's all going down in the hallways, on floors, up against the walls. And from what I understand, in a strip club where women are dancing for men, it's more like the lions on the Serengeti watching some gazelle come through the watering hole.
I was shocked. I mean, I haven't been to a strip club since the 90s. But, I mean, the goings-ons and this going on was going on. It's a situation where I'm too embarrassed to even repeat it to my mother. And if I'm too embarrassed to repeat it to my mother, I don't need to be involved.
Well, I think, for one, that your mom will probably completely get the issue a little bit skewed. Not trying to talk bad about mom, but
no, that will twist her wig. But I guess,
well,
you know, double standards in the sex trade is a topic for another time.
Another time. I would like to encourage everyone that is able to, I want you to keep listening to our show, but if you can, set your DVR to CBS this evening at 8 o'clock to watch Santa Claus Be a Real Rat Bastard. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is coming on, and this is the show that every year I love to watch because Santa comes off as the biggest dick in the world in this Christmas special.
Are you allowed to say that word on radio?
You say it every week, so I'm sorry.
I do not, and I said penis today.
Yeah, but calling Santa a dick and talking about a penis are two entirely different things.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Saint Nick is Saint Dick in this Christmas special. He's rude and dismissive towards the reindeer. He makes fun of a handicapped child, basically Rudolph.
You really gonna go here?
He is belittling to his wife, and he keeps an island of misfit toys that aren't fit to play with by children. I mean, we grew up to this Christmas special. I waited every year for this Christmas special. I couldn't wait to go over my grandparents' house every year, and I knew what was going down. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was going to be watched at Christmas Eve or the Christmas week, and Frosty the Snowman. We were going to watch that. I don't care what was going on in the world. From about 68 on, we were watching Rudolph. And it wasn't until I was an adult before I realized Rudolph had it bad in this Christmas episode, in this Christmas special.
But you know what? If you watch most of our cartoons with an adult eye, we was getting some effed up messages.
Especially from the 60s through the mid 70s.
Oh, honey, even before that. So you've heard the phrase nigger in a woodpile, right?
Never heard that in my life. I swear to you, I almost spit out my iced tea just now. What?
Well, nigga in a wood pile is a reference that's been around for literally like 150 years. And the premise is that something's wrong with this picture. That's a way of saying something is wrong with this picture. And if you look at, that movie, what's that movie from 1915? The black and white.
Birth of a Nation?
Birth of a Nation. You will see the scene where they cut to where there's a black person in a woodpile. So, minding my own business, I'm watching Bugs Bunny one day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing something and gets dynamite exploded in his face. And then all the stuff blows up in the air. When it comes back down, it's a wood pile with his little burnt out face in the middle of it.
No.
Yes.
No.
And see, if you've never heard of nigga in a wood pile before, you just would just think, oh, yeah, ha ha, funny. And I was like, wait. That ain't right. Something is wrong with that picture. It's a nigga in a wood pile.
Oh.
I didn't make up the phrase.
No, I believe you. I believe you. I believe you. 100% I believe you. But also know that the Warner Brothers cartoons were not exactly politically correct. Even in their day, they weren't politically correct. And especially now, they are completely wrong.
Completely.
Briefly, in the 80s, I've worked briefly for the local Fox station here in Baltimore. And back then, they weren't really a Fox affiliate. They used Fox programming, but they weren't really a Fox affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
And during the afternoons, they would show cartoons for kids from about 3 o'clock till 5. So you got your Speed Racer and your He-Man, Masters of the Universe, and you know, yeah, your Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes cartoon. And the job I had back then was working in the programming department, helped setting up schedule for these shows, basically pulling the tape so that these shows could be aired the next day. And part of that job was periodically we would pull cartoons and screen them to make sure they were still good for children to watch today.
How many did you have to throw out?
Right, so we're talking late 80s. And you would be surprised the stuff that we would have to pull to be edited or pulled out. I mean, things got missed. There were times things got missed.
I mean, you can't even watch a whole section of Tom and Jerry.
Right, and that's what I was just getting ready to say. There's a Tom and Jerry episode where the maid who was...
The one who you only see her legs with her stockings hanging down.
You only see her legs in her midsection and her legs and her arms. So as you could tell, she was black. And she's in the kitchen cooking. And Jerry comes in and she freaks out and she calls for Tom. And she is jumping up and down going, oh, Lordy, Lordy, Lordy. Oh, Jesus.
Lord Jesus,
oh, Lord.
Come, somebody come get this mouth. Lord Jesus, help me. I was just trying to cook, Lord Jesus.
And this was the only time I have ever seen this in a Tom and Jerry cartoon. They cut to her face, and her eyes are bugged out, her hair is spread out, and her lips are bigger than two water balloons.
Looking like Rochester.
Exactly. And it got missed, and this aired. And we were sitting in the programming department watching the feed and saw it, and all you know where broke out.
The switchboard lit up?
Before the switchboard could light up, I worked for a lady named Margaret Jung, and I know Margaret occasionally listens to our show, and I hope one day she'll call in. And I know she remembers this. We ran from the programming department to the studio because, you know, once the shows are put in, it's just like a projector room in a movie theater back in those days. people weren't paying attention to what was being shown. They plug the things into the computer and they start showing them. Boy.
Boy, howdy.
Whoo. Came flying into the studio, grabbing tapes, pulling tapes, pushing in a tape that had a disclaimer on it and an apology. Because, yeah,
dead
the
air.
Switchboard.
Did the color bars come up?
Oh, yeah.
And the national anthem?
We're sorry, we're experiencing technical difficulties at this time.
Please stand by.
Please stand by and disregard the obvious Sambo Negro reference that's in this cartoon. Oh,
yeah.
Good day.
I encourage all adults to watch what their kids are watching because, I mean, you know how they would do the symbols, hit the person with the symbols, and all of a sudden they would come out with squinty eyes. And they always had, like, the Mexican person sitting in the corner with a poncho and a sombrero. Crazy.
I watched the episode, an old movie the other night, The Falcon in Mexico. And the Mexican characters were so stereotypical, it was ridiculous. Now, this movie was made in 1944.
Context is everything.
Context is everything. But, again, no excuses sometimes. It was just wrong on every single level you could think of.
Well, you know, I think, what is it, the African Queen, where everybody's running around bones in their noses and plates in their lips? And consequently, whenever they would show an African on Bugs Bunny, he would have a plate in his lip and a bone in his nose.
Exactly.
And a loincloth.
And always talk. Oh, and African speak was always juba 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 juba.
And then all they would let the Mexicans say, "See,
si? Si, señori.
No speak the English." Crazy.
So we have come.
And what do you, I mean, and those are the images that, I mean, I just think about growing up when I grew up. I mean, things cleared up a bit with the 80s. And, you know, of course they had Homegrown Josie and the Pussycats, and she was fairly normal. But other than that, we were looking at some shiggity.
Oh, she was fairly normal. For the 70s,
fairly.
She was normal. For the 70s, she was normal.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't running around with a plate in her lip.
No, but didn't she have a black... She had a, didn't she, they wasn't that black pussycat who was a little bit more...
Yeah, Josie and the Pussycats. What did I say?
A little more luscious than the rest of the other singers?
I don't remember what her lips looked... And Josie and the Pussycats is my favorite cartoon. She had a donkey booty.
That's what I'm saying. She had a little more luscious going on.
But I think her lips were normal. And she didn't have like a big old afro. That's why we love the Jackson 5 cartoon. This is black.
Yeah, no, we got down
TV.
With the Jackson 5, even though I couldn't understand how he had a snake and two rats, and neither one of those rats ever came up missing.
And Fat Albert, you know, I love me some Bill Cosby, but if you look at Fat Albert, that's a mess.
Those are characterizations of the people that Bill grew up with.
The one that was always was walking, and he would shake his head while he's walking and bounce up and down. He had a pimp stroll going.
And a lot of those people, those characters grew up and became famous in their own right. Mushmouth, for example, went on to walk, march in the civil rights movement.
You lying.
Dumb Donald.
Who was Mushmouth?
Wait a minute, I'll get to it. Dumb Donald went on and got in the restaurant business and became the president and CEO of Godfather's Pizza. And eventually ran for president.
I thought you were serious. I was getting ready to head to Wikipedia.
I'm not, I shouldn't be laughing because he was famous for 999, but back in the Bill Cosby days, he had trouble counting. So.
So who's the cat with the sexy walk? Is that Denzel?
No. I don't think that's Denzel. But Mushmouth, after marching in the Civil Rights Movement, ran for Congress and is better known today as Congressman John Lewis.
I thought you were going to say Clyburn. Because, you know, I love me some Clyburn. But half the time, I don't know what he's saying.
Well, that's how I am with John Lewis. I'm sitting there going, they hit John in the head a lot when he was trying to cross the bridge.
Right.
I think they stuck
right.
John out front. Congressman Lewis was like Coach on Cheers. He could probably get hit in the head with a baton better than anybody in the movement. Because today when John Lewis talks, you just go, okay. All right.
So, wait, speaking of Coach, that is a good segue into one of our topics.
Yeah.
Football. It is. Unfortunately.
Even though Coach was a baseball coach, we need to get into the show this evening. And, yes, it's very disturbing to me what happened in Kansas City. And I'm sure all of our listeners know the story. If they don't, let me do a quick recap. Young man, 25 years old, named Javon Belcher. A member of the Kansas City Chiefs football team. And I don't know if he was a starter, but he was definitely a player, an integral part of their defense. Murdered his girlfriend and mother of their three-month-old child Sunday morning, and then drove to the Kansas City Chiefs facility and committed suicide in front of his coach and general manager. This swirls into a whole lot of different topics, a whole lot of things going on in this society. And I have my own views on it, but Kamal, as a woman, and we just discussed domestic violence last week, and we will be, again, trying to schedule a show centered strictly around domestic violence. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on what happened from a woman's perspective, from a mother's perspective, from a fellow human being's perspective.
Well, you know, unfortunately, my first thought was, you know, the first thing I went to was, what role did steroids play in that? You know, sometimes crazy is just crazy. But as we've been hearing so much, you know, of these football players, after years and years and years of taking hits and doing steroids, Junior Seau, you know, they present violence upon themselves and those who love them. And he hasn't been in very long, so that's likely not the case. But that was my first thought. My second thought was, you know, we need gun control. We really need gun control. And then, of course, I went to my experiences, you know, what was going on in this house. I know that they had couple counseling, but nobody knows for sure. You know, you always wonder what drives a person to do this. As a mother, I was so relieved that he didn't do anything to the baby, because, you know, sometimes they just take out family and then themselves.
This is true.
I'm hurting for both mothers. You know, it's one thing when you lose a child, But it's another thing when you lose the child because of a preventable violent act by somebody else's child. And they're a couple, you know? How you know, as a mother, how would I deal with that? It's one thing if my kid is, you know, killed by some random act of violence or hit by a car, but if she's killed by the man that she loves and they have a baby, and I have to, you know, step up to the plate and take care of my grandchild, how do I plan a funeral? How do I do all of this stuff? You know, and it's not his family's fault, but how do I look, you know, the other grandmother in her face? I mean, how do you do that? That has got to be the hardest thing that those two mothers will ever have to do, because I know if my child was the perpetrator, I wouldn't know. I mean, all I could do is say I'm sorry 50,000 times and wonder over and over again what I could have done to prevent this. You know, is it something, you know, did I raise him, did I, well, with my child, did I raise her wrong? Did I, you know, if I had a, you know, if my husband was abusive, is it my fault that I never left that abusive relationship and that's what my child knows? I mean, there's just so many things that could possibly be going through their heads. And, you know, how does her family find the strength to not lash out at his family? Because, I mean, that's just human nature, you know?
Right. Well, everything I've read about what happened, and because I'm such a huge football fan and a human being, and, you know, like you said, this touches on so many different issues, domestic violence, gun control. Anyway, I wanted to know as much about this and bring this to the show tonight. But everything I've read, as you pointed out, they have been in couples counseling. They've had some problems for a minute. One of the things, you know, and again, let me just emphasize this point. As we go through this process of finding out all the details, or all the details that we'll ever find out, more things are going to come out. Probably some so-called facts will be changed or altered. Probably information that was reported one way will be turned another way. We don't know. But as it stands right now, some of the things that we know that are facts are a teammate of his, Jamal Charles, who is a running back for Kansas City, a prominent player in the league. This was his wife's, the young lady was his wife's cousin. And he introduced the two of them to each other.
Oh,
and
my
wife
gosh.
Did.
Can you imagine the
exactly.
guilt that they feel?
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that aspect.
So you take that into consideration, the guilt that's riding on Jamal Charles' shoulders and his wife's shoulders. And, you know, one of the things that all professional athletes have to be on the lookout for are gold diggers. Male and female, depending on what you do, you know, what sports you play, what your level of participation is. But you have a man who's married to a lady. He's very happy with this lady, evidently. And they decide to play matchmaker. And knowing this, you know in the back of their minds they got to be saying, well, I know that he's a good guy. He's a teammate of mine. And our cousin is a good woman, so she won't be going after his money. So it should be a good match. They're young. They're you know, they should have a lot in common. And evidently they had a pretty good relationship to decide to have a family. Well, maybe they didn't decide, but they were raising the child together. The girl moved from New York to Kansas City to be with him. But from what I've read today and yesterday as well, they were having a lot of financial issues, and they were both in counseling, and the team was doing things. And I got to commend Kansas City Chiefs organization for trying to work with this couple to make things better. You know, a lot of times.
And see, now that you mention that, that brings up another pet peeve of mine is taking these young guys and giving them all this money, and they don't know how to manage it. What financial issues could they have possibly been having at the age of 22 and 25 when he has a football contract, unless, you know, they bought a house they couldn't afford and a car they couldn't afford?
Well, they were renting a house. I know the car he drove, he was driving that night, and the car that he was driving when he committed suicide was a Bentley. But I also know he was not early round draft pick. Matter of fact, he was a free agent, and he was drafted by another team and came on to Kansas City a couple of years ago and worked his way into a starting role. So he wasn't a superstar. He wasn't making superstar money.
He's so why is he driving
better
a Bentley?
Than you and I. Well, I mean, come on. You know, these kids get a contract and they make it a signing bonus of, you know, for a low-tendered player, you might get a signing bonus of $250,000. That's cash money in your pocket. Boom. After taxes, it's probably something in the neighborhood of $150,000,
$175,000. Which goes back to my point about financial counseling.
Right. So all this counseling can come into play. What my point is, Kansas City was doing more than you would expect teams to do. Just like you said, to give people this money and give kids this money and you're on your own. Earn what you can, keep what you can, whatever, but you're on your own. That's why, you know, there's so many athletes that end up broke. But evidently Kansas City was or is a better organization than a lot of them, or maybe they're structuring the league now to prevent that, but they're working with this couple on a lot of levels. But then again, as we see weekly on these reality shows, which I hate, women can go through money. I believe one of the problems that Shaq, the basketball player Shaq, and his wife had were she was hiding money from him, and she was spending money that he didn't know she was spending and hiding money he didn't know she was hiding. So that.
Well, now, hold up. Men could spend some money, too. How many of these basketball players do you see with $7 million spreads that have this massive home theater and, you know, driving Bentleys? I mean, let's be clear.
Well, no, and I'm not saying that men don't.
I can spend some money. I got tired. I told my daughter, it's tiring spending your daddy's money. However, I have a budget. I make money, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to put my house in jeopardy or my vehicles in jeopardy.
Right.
You know, I have common sense while I'm spending my money and my husband's.
Right, but I'm just saying specifically in Shaq's case, this was an issue I heard that they were having when they initially split up and got back together again and split up for this final time. He discovered that she was hiding money. So,
and see, you know what? As an abuse survivor, I hide money. My husband knows I hide it, but I hide it. It's just something that I can't get over. You know, I have an account.
Because in your circumstances, that makes sense. But you brought
maybe
that up to
maybe
your
that
husband.
Was kind of her circumstance too.
Well, I don't know, because when you're talking about, I mean, Shaq was making ridiculous money, and I applaud him for knowing that out of that ridiculous money, something was funny. Because I'll be honest with you, if good Lord willing, and something happens, and I'm making basketball money, $14, $15 million a year, I might not miss $200,000 right away. You know? But maybe because he's mindful, maybe she was doing something else, but whatever it was, and then maybe someone will call in and explain it to me, or maybe someone knows and will explain it to us, me.
Maybe he had a prenup that she wasn't quite happy with, so she
maybe
was taking
that,
grocery money
that.
And sending it off the side.
But I don't know, and I'm not trying to point blame at this young lady, but I just know that they were having financial issues. But the biggest
mm-hmm.
thing that struck me immediately from the story that was out from the beginning, what I've read today, and there's been changes to this already, but his issue, Javon's issue with this young lady, Chrissy, one of the issues he had was that she came home after 1 o'clock from a concert. And
which
that
happens after concerts, you know.
It does.
Sometimes concerts end late.
Don't know. Maybe the concert didn't end as late. But, you know, the initial thing that came to my mind is she has a 3-month-old baby. I don't care who's watching the child. If you've got a 3-month-old baby, why are you out until after 1 o'clock in the morning?
But see, slow your roll. I mean, if she's out that late every single weekend, then yes, there's a problem. But, you know, I went to a late concert. I went to a burlesque show, actually, and I didn't get home until 3, and my daughter was 4 months old and at home with my husband. Now, that
back up.
Happened,
back up.
That
she was home.
That did not
husband.
Happen every single weekend.
Right, she
but
was home
sometimes
with your husband, her dad.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it could have been my mom too, you know. But I guess my point being is sometimes you need a break. It when that baby
oh,
is
yeah.
that young, it is constant.
Oh, yeah.
And she's young, you know. For me, you know, I was in my 30s when I had my daughter, so I had pretty much done everything I needed to do, so I was not out hanging out with my girlfriends all the time. And I'm not saying that's what she was doing, but, you know, moms deserve a little break every now and again.
Not saying moms don't, but at 22, and I'm old school, and we'll discuss your time warp issue with you having your child in your 30s and you're 25 now, but we'll get to that later.
And I'm going to be 25 tomorrow, too. How about that?
But my initial thing was you're 22 years old, you have a 3-month-old baby, you shouldn't be coming home at 1 o'clock in the morning. Now, what's been changed and what's come out today is, yes, she was out late, and he was out late. And now my issue is, you're a young father. Your career is to play on Sunday. Your job is to show up Sunday morning for a 7 o'clock meeting and be refreshed and prepared to play a football game at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And you're out partying, and you don't come in until after 1 o'clock, and then, you know, if this is the discipline that's going on the team, then you wonder why Kansas City is considered one of the worst teams in the league. And I say anyone shouldn't have fun, but when you got to get up in the morning and be at a meeting at 7 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, and be physically dominant at your best, and you're being paid a lot of money, then you don't need to be hanging out late. So to me, both of these kids had issues that they needed addressed, and maybe that was part of the counseling that was going on with them.
Well, I mean, clearly their actions are those of young people,
mm-hmm.
you know, who probably were too young to be having kids.
And,
they hadn't quite finished partying and getting it out of their system.
Getting out of their system. But when you become a professional
again,
athlete.
But I don't begrudge a mom having a night off. Now, 8, 9, 10 nights off, we got a problem.
Right. Well, see, but again, what I'm saying is my initial problem when I heard the first thing I heard and my initial thought was, here's a guy who has to get up and be ready, you know, have his 7 o'clock in the morning team meeting and then get ready and play this physically demanding game. And a few more hours after that, and the mother of his child is out to 1 o'clock in the morning. So I'm thinking, well, because this is the issue. But then I find out that he was out late. And matter of fact, he stayed out, got home, they had their fight. He went back out and stayed somewhere else and asked the people he was staying with, make sure I'm up at 6:30 so I don't miss my meeting and get fined. So he didn't even stay home that night himself. Then he goes home, 6:30 He gets up, goes home, 6:30 And what the reports I've read, the police reports I've read, said that his mother was downstairs in the kitchen and heard him say to the young girl, Chrissy, or Cassie, I'm sorry, Cassie, you can't talk to me like that. There's a couple of moments of silence, and she heard him say, I'm sorry. And at some point or another, she went upstairs and saw him kiss her on the forehead and then pull out the gun and shoot her.
Oh, so his mom witnessed that?
His mom witnessed that.
This is just tragic all around.
Right. So that's the story I heard so far. Then he left the house, drove to Kansas City facility where he was confronted or met up with or saw the general manager of the team. Or the general manager of the team found him, confronted him, whatever. He was talking to this kid, Javon, as Javon was holding a gun to his own head and trying to tell him, it doesn't have to end this way. You can, you know, you don't do this. Whatever it is, don't do this. And he said, I shot her. I shouldn't, you know, he was apologetic and he was trying to thank the general manager for all that the team has tried to do for them. Then the coach showed up and the coach and the general manager tried to talk him down. Don't know at this point whether it was working or not working. Don't know what effect it was having. The conversation obviously went on for a little while. And then the police started to show up, sirens, cars were pulling up, and the player, Javon, went behind his car that he drove to the facility in, crossed himself, and then shot himself in the head.
And see, what does it say about our society that that's how we end arguments, with a gun? You know, I mean, you know how I roll. I roll with a sock full of quarters.
Hot nickels.
Hot nickels and quarters. That's how I end my arguments. But, you know, you ain't got to kill nobody. I just bruise them a little. You know, I mean, I just... I've never been so mad at somebody that I want to shoot them. Beat them with my sock? Absolutely. But remove them from earth? No. Even all the dirt that's been done to me, I've never been compelled to actually kill somebody. And it's not like I ain't had no reason.
Well, you know, we all talk about it, but I'm going to be about it. I'll tell you straight up right now, completely, without question, without equivocation. I'll do the time, and I will put a hot one in somebody if they bother my child.
Yes.
And I don't mean pick on my child. I don't mean, you know, belittle or you know, play games with my child. But a Jerry Sandusky situation or worse, I will kill someone.
And that might compel me to kill somebody. But to this date, in my 25 years, I have never wanted to do that to somebody. Yeah, and I've been very, very angry, but never angry enough to pull a trigger. And I guess that's because I feel like you have to be really, really pissed to go that far, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to have everything.
Maybe I have been. Maybe I have been angry enough to kill somebody, and it's just not in me to go to that final step. You know, I'll just swing my quarters, bop you in the head, and keep moving.
At that time you were that angry, did you have access to a firearm?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so.
Never occurred to me.
But we are at a point in this society now, and it's been that way for a while, because I grew up through the period where people stopped fighting and started shooting to settle arguments. You know, we didn't have a situation where kids were bringing guns to school. But you know where they are now. But it was clear that things had changed in even the areas I grew up in, where people were no longer fighting and people were shooting.
Well, so you had I mean. Even though I'm only 25, I grew up in the 80s. I was born in 1970. So, I mean, while I don't really recall fisticuffs, I do recall when gun violence surged. You know, I lost a lot of friends in the mid-80s to gang violence. And I don't keep a gun in my house. I've never kept a gun in my house, but I have had access to guns. It would have to be premeditated, because I would have to say, you know what, I'm going to go get my granddaddy's gun and I will be back. But I've just never been in a situation like that. And knock on wood, I won't have to. I can agree that all bets are off if somebody, you know, harms my child. But hopefully I won't ever have to confront that.
Well, yeah, I hear you. One of the things that my father taught me and stays true in my mind today, because now the situation, the game has changed, but even then when I was a kid, he told me, you're fighting somebody, whether you win or lose, whatever, at the end of the fight, if they say, I'll be back, then you leave. He said,
right.
Don't ever wait for someone to come back, because when they come back, it ain't going to go well.
Mm-mm, yeah, that won't end well for you.
Right. So no matter, you know, you can be mad, you can be pounding your chest, yeah, I want do that whole I'm the king of the jungle thing, but when they say I'm leaving and I'll be back, then you need to go. You never know,
and you know, that just brings back.
Back.
I mean, we'll never know what that conversation was about between the two of them. But what could she have possibly have said to him to make him get a gun and shoot her with it, and then shoot himself? I just, in that situation, I can't fathom what she could have said to deserve that.
I don't. You know, I talk a lot and play a lot about it, and I still have issues with the things I have to go through with my own baby mama drama, if I can, you know, be real blunt and honest with America right now. But I would never think to try to take my child's mother away from him.
Right. Whatever issues, and, you know, we got baby mama drama over here, you know, with my ex-sister-in-law. And Lord knows I want to punch her in the face on the regular. And she deserves it. I just can't fathom doing anything to permanently remove that mother from the kids' lives. Even though she deserves it, she needs to have her parental rights severed, but she don't need to be severed.
Got a caller right now, just came in. Call from 982 Exchange 410 area code. Do you have something you'd like to say?
Dear Brother Yale, this is Brother Patrick. How you doing?
My man, what's up, Patrick?
Hi, Brother Patrick. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you this evening?
I'm just fine.
Is a young man that I consider my big little brother.
And
we could pass as twins. We could pass this.
Call me his sweetheart. Uh oh.
Yeah, because Patrick is a smooth dude. Let me tell America something about Patrick. Patrick is a smooth dude. We could be twins, except for the fact that he's taller, bigger, and more handsome than I am, but we could pass.
So Patrick, how you doing?
Don't
I'm
start.
All right, love. Good
start.
Evening. How you doing?
Don't fall for the okie doke, Patrick. Don't let us seduce.
Don't do it.
My brother right now is trying to change his career from being an optometrist to a podiatrist just to keep Kamal happy.
I don't think America gets
compels
particular
me.
Inside joke.
The power of Christ compels me. I got you.
You need a young priest and an old priest.
I prefer no priest, actually.
So the old
okay,
priest and
well,
the young priest are sitting at the top of the hill.
Anyway,
the young
how
priest
you doing,
says,
Catherine?
Let's run down this hill.
I'm blessed.
Save all these Christians.
So, Patrick, how's your wife?
My ex-wife is fine, as far
go.
As I know.
Here
oh.
We go.
Here oh, okay, your
go.
Ex-wife. Oh, okay.
But my girlfriend is just fine. She's at work.
I'm fitting the mood.
Oh.
You ain't got to tell her no more.
Come on,
is Peg Bundy. She married with all kinds of children. Don't let her. Don't. What do you got to say?
Barracuda.
What do you have to say, bro?
I just wanted to speak on, I was listening in, and you were speaking on the young man that killed his fiance, girlfriend, and then himself. And, you know, I'm an avid gun owner / collector, and I have been in situations before where I have almost stepped across the threshold of just completely canceling someone's life. But just to me, I can't speak for anyone else. Having my gun, or guns, plural, has made me a much calmer
hello.
Person, knowing
reach.
That I can just reach over onto my seat and pull that Desert Eagle out and cancel your Christmas. Just
and
like,
all
you know
Christmas
what?
Is to come.
And I'm just like, you know what? I'm not even going to go there. There have been times, you know, situations have gotten a little thick. I'm not going to incriminate myself. But, you know, some flies fell in my pudding. I'll just leave it like that.
Backstroking across to your spoon. I feel you.
Right. But my issue with the young man is, aside from their domestic issues, aside from their fiduciary issues, my issue is just mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Because no person who's relatively sane, I mean, we all have our breaking points. We all snap within given circumstances and certain stimuli. But the fact to kill that young lady in his home where his mother was present and their newborn child, then go kill yourself. Something was wrong with him.
Yeah.
Just point blank. I mean, aside from them having their issues with each other, he has his own demons that were perpetuated onto her. And I've worked some years ago in the mental illness field. And, you know, Lord forgive me, but crazy is crazy. You can
well, that's
dress
what
it up.
It says. Sometimes crazy is just crazy.
You can put a tuxedo on it, and you're just well-dressed and crazy. So it's just worrisome. And, you know, we don't know the stresses, you know, in their lives, whatever. It can't be no more stressful than mine. Being a single dad, trying to make ends meet, so on and so forth, dealing with my children's mothers and such. And the fact that I haven't, you know, driven over them with my car is a testament to, you know, it's like, you know what, sometimes you don't have to be right. Just let it go.
Yeah, and that's the point. At some point, ego be damned.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, ego be damned. It's time to walk away and just say, okay, you're right. in your mind I'm this or that, and I'm just going to walk away because it could go badly from this point on. But one of the listeners just sent me a message and makes a good point. Under the circumstances that we've detailed and the circumstances of this whole issue, you've killed the mother of your three-month-old baby daughter in your home in front of your own mother. If you snap back into sanity, what can be said to you at that point to stop you from pulling the trigger on yourself? I mean, I'm no professional counselor. I did work at Social Security Administration, so I've dealt with crazy people. But under those circumstances, what can be said? And I know of a situation personally where a couple had a domestic issue, and the man, they had a 5-year-old little girl. The man started stabbing his wife in front of her family, her sisters, and they pulled out a gun and killed him. The wife died and the husband died. So to go back to your point, Kamal, these families have to interact with each other now for the sake of the baby. But how do
right,
they deal
because
with
you know
each
what?
Other?
I could see a custody battle being very ugly.
It could, or they could just put everything aside and say, you know what, we're going to work together to make sure this child has the best life that she can have.
I hope
despite
so.
Despite these circumstances. And I think that's
well,
what happens.
I mean,
but you also have
and
to
I,
think
I hope
about.
So. I mean, in all likelihood, the baby will probably be raised by the woman's mother. That's just how the justice system usually works. I just hope, I just pray for the whole family.
But do you think, as in a family unit that has gone through such a tragedy as that, do you think that ultimately, you know, with the egos, the hurt, the anger, the backing and forthing, do you think that, and sadly to say, people of color can get to that point to say, you know what, we're going to come together to raise this child. You know, for the first year, it's going to be, it's your fault. If you didn't and he didn't, then, you know, then it just splinters everyone even farther apart.
True point.
I'd like
but
to
also
think that,
think,
and I think it probably would have to come from her mother, since her child was the victim. And she, you know, based on the justice system, will probably end up raising the child. And I think that they'll have to cut out all the noise, meaning the siblings, the cousins, you know, and just deal mother to mother. And if they can just forgive and deal mother to mother, I think that they have a fighting chance.
Well, I don't know what her family situation is. Actually, I don't know either one of the family dynamics are. I just know that from what I read today, her family has posted something on her Facebook page, basically asking for prayers and privacy during this period, and no one is pushing up or pointing fingers at anybody right now. And I think if I were in that circumstance and having to deal with that for the first minute, I would be too devastated to want to affix blame. Now, the team has come together, the players and the organization, the company that is the Kansas City franchise has come together, and they set up a fund to make sure that the little girl will have everything she needs to grow up. So there are people stepping up, and I don't know how it's going to play out. His mother, her family, I don't know how that's all going to work out. This is a tragedy.
Well,
that it has to be figured out.
That in
out
itself
at this point.
Could cause issues if there's money that needs to be administered.
Yeah, but if the team and the teammates have established the fund, then they will probably stay. Well, they will probably appoint someone to administer those funds. You know, you're not just going to establish a fund and turn it over to somebody If you're going to go that far and establish a fund, you want someone to administer it. So as much as we could talk this issue for the entire rest of the show, but I do want to move on. Patrick, you know I got mad love for you, man, but as long as I know you got that 50 in your passenger seat, I'm a ride in the back.
It's not a 50,
right.
It's a 44. Okay.
Call 44? Again.
Here we
it's
go.
It's a 44 Magnum.
I should have never told her we could pass for twins, because now she's going to be all over you wondering if you throw dollar bills at yourself in the bathroom before you get in the shower like I do. I'm just too damn sexy.
I'm no threat. I'm all the way on the West Coast until I come to Maryland to visit.
Here we go.
My husband's going to hurt me. Let me stop.
Yeah, please. Husbands get kind of jealous.
Yes, and I don't think a husband carries a gun, but he is the king of queens. I'm just saying, we'll let it go. I don't want to say anything more.
Now, he don't carry a gun, but my brother is 6'5" and 330 pounds, and he carries him. That's
he's
his
about,
gun.
He's almost as big as Patrick.
Oh, really?
Oh, shit. I'm sorry.
For like some tall.
Here we go.
And so we start.
Here we go.
Thank you for calling in, Patrick. I'll holler at you later.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man.
Not yet.
Oh.
You're welcome.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, Patrick, when she comes in town, I am going to introduce her to Cockeye Jr. first. So just so you know.
Oh, Lord. Not Uncle Nate. I'm going to hang up now. Have a good one.
All right,
you
man.
Too, Patrick. Bye.
So, okay, as much as I don't want to, we got to move along this last half hour and try to cover a few more quick topics. Number one is Syria.
Yeah. Do we have to?
Yeah, we got to talk about it because, again, as what was attempted to be said about our president during the election process being weak and having a foreign policy stance that was not conducive to respect to the country, all this BS that they were floating, Barack Obama came out and was very deliberate. He and his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, very deliberate about telling the Syrian government, don't play with the chemical weapon. Don't play with the chemical weapon. Y'all want to play, it's going to be real ugly for you.
Right, it won't be pretty.
It won't be pretty. Do not use chemical warfare. Either take that whooping or settle a way to get out of it. But don't.
Or you will have your head thrown in the sea.
You see, but this, you know, as much as I applaud the president's harsh stance and applaud the fact that the Israeli prime minister came out and said, we are of one mind with the United States and President Obama on this issue. So there goes that whole argument out the window, as that he and Netanyahu aren't willing to work together, or Netanyahu doesn't trust him. Man's holding it down. But as much as I agree with that stance, and as much as I believe that chemical weapons are the worstest thing that can be used, either in ordinary warfare, dirty warfare, whatever you want to call it.
Right, because that's how zombies are made.
I thought zombies were made by a male, a daddy zombie, and a mommy zombie. Anyway, I have to ask myself, how do you create a weapon that is never intended to be used? And how do you tell someone, we know you got those weapons, but you better not use them?
Well, he just did.
He did, and they meant it. And we all know what happened, you know, when George W. Bush went to war with Iraq, about, you know, they're going to have weapons of mass destruction, they're going to have chemical weapons. And my whole feeling was there aren't any, because if they were, they would have used them. Because at no point whatsoever would it have been bad for them to use them. You know what I'm saying? If you tell me, I know you have a shotgun in your house, and you better not use it when I come to take it from you, I'm going to use my shotgun on you, because you're going to take it regardless. So how do you invest all these resources, this money, into having weapons that someone tells you can't use? And what would happen if you did use them? You're still going to be, you know.
Yeah, well, first of all, you're going to take out your own people, and then your entire country will be wiped from the face of the earth by the UN.
Yeah, well, they won't go up to the whole country.
Wearing gas masks.
Right. But to use them on a civilian populace, to use any of your weapons on your civilian populace, I don't care what they are. I don't care if it's rocks and sticks. To use force against your civilian populace that's uprising, if you can't negotiate your way out of it, maybe it's time for you to go.
SEAL Team 6. SEAL Team 6.
And just so people know, there's a whole lot more SEAL teams than 6. SEAL Team 6 can be standing on the border, and SEAL Team 8 can be climbing in your window. Just so you know.
Yeah, but you get my point.
Exactly. That's where I'm going. And SEAL Team 6 is the most overt covert. Okay? Don't get it twisted. There's a whole lot of people who can disappear and never be heard from again, or fall out of a bathroom window when they're in a house with a whole lot of other people and no one hear them fall. So,
right, they can fall on their knife 15 times.
Right. Or send a drone over your country and send a missile into your bathroom while you're relieving yourself. It can happen.
It probably has happened.
Yeah, ask Hamas. It has definitely happened. Ask some people in Pakistan. It has definitely happened. But I just don't understand the reasoning for having a weapon that you can't use, or the world won't let you use, or, you know, maybe it's a deterrent against invasion. But I got to think that if I tell people I have chemical weapons, you better not attack me, they're going to use something stronger than chemical weapons to attack me. So, determined or not determined, a deterrent will not keep those who want to get in. And the people that you have there should not be living under the thumb of, well, you know, the government, the military has this capability to not just wipe out those who are fighting, but wipe out everyone around us as well.
Can we put all their leaders in the Thunderdome?
We will define leaders. Because I'm believing right now that some of
the
leaders,
the Iranians, just all of them. I'm just so over this.
They're not going to go. They haven't gone in 60 years. They're not going to go. And a good point, I watched a good point being made today on Good Morning Joe on MSNBC this morning at about 7 o'clock, 7:15, 7:30.
Did you tell Mika to shut up today?
No, he didn't. But Mika told him. But I digress. Tony Blair was on, and he was, you know, Mika asked him, why do we keep getting drawn into this situation thinking we can make it better when it hasn't been better in over 60 years? We keep running into the Middle East to try to solve the problems. These problems are, and we discussed this ourselves, these problems are thousands of years old. These people hate each other. But that's the Israeli-Arab conflict. But within the countries themselves, and these countries were created out of the British Empire dividing up borders or setting up borders to create countries in this region, it's a quagmire that will never, seemingly never be solved. And we keep getting dragged in. And the only real reason we keep getting dragged in is because that's where the oil is, okay? The spice must flow. And people will always die because the spice must flow. I'm detached from the issue, but sometimes I wish I had, like, a relative that was living in that region who could experience what is going on. In that
like
region.
In Egypt?
Like in Egypt, or
yeah,
or Syria,
I thought you did have a relative.
Huh?
I thought you did have a relative in Egypt living over there.
No, I thought I had a relative living over there. But if I only had someone that could experience it and put their life on the line and so they could report back to me as to how bad it really is.
Like an investigative journalist?
That would be good. If anyone knows of any investigative journalist that live in that region.
Wouldn't he run the risk of being captured and being held at gunpoint in a hospital after getting shot in the ass?
Or stabbed or punched. I mean, these people are ruthless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
But if we had someone on the ground that could report this to us, this would be great. This would be excellent. But I just want to applaud the president for standing up and doing what he's been doing since he took office in 2009, letting people know we ain't playing this. We are not weak on foreign policy. You want to play with chemical weapons, don't play with them. And under this circumstance, because there will be repercussions. And as much as I'm as war-weary as the rest of the nation, I applaud his stance, and I believe he means what he says. He brought people out of Iraq. He can point that arrow straight at Syria, and it can get real funky. Doesn't always have to be about drone strikes. You know, Libya got off lightly. And while I'm at it, and let me tie this back in real quick, because this is, I think this is important. Did you hear today that Sarah Palin issued an apology?
You know what? That heifer, please don't do, I quit. I can't do her. Did you hear that apology?
Yes, I did hear that apology. And this, again, has to tie in
you know,
to what we were talking about earlier.
You know, she can kiss my socialist communist ass. How about that, Palin?
It just amazes me that she would apologize to Republican elected officials, Congress people, who she called wusses, because that was not appropriate. Yet she has never apologized for saying President Obama should stop shucking and jiving. Talk
or
about nigga in the woodpile.
Or palling around with terrorists.
You know, I don't even count the palling around with terrorists issue anymore. The shucking and jiving thing to me is more inappropriate than palling around with terrorists.
She is out of what little mind she has.
And I just want to know why she's still relevant.
Because Sean Hannity keeps giving her a platform.
And why is Sean Hannity still relevant?
I don't know why he was relevant in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly.
But
and
yes,
you look at
Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity keeps giving her a platform for her to run her lips. And she says stupid shit every single time. I apologize to anybody who was listening to me say the word shit, but that's just what it is, shit.
I can't say dick, but she can say shit. Anyway, I mean, it's not unprecedented that losing vice presidential candidates do not go away quietly into that good night. It's happened before.
No, it hasn't.
Yeah, John Edwards.
Vice presidents have not gone quietly into that good night. But vice presidential candidates from the previous election, who ran their mouth?
I'm just saying, John Edwards stayed in the limelight.
Not for running his mouth. That was for running his...
Well, he was doing something with his mouth. It didn't look like running. It you know, how that all turned out. But Joe Lieberman returned to public life and became a problem. I can't even tell you who was Bob Dole's
vice
presidential running.
But Lieberman had a job. John Edwards was not inserting himself into public policy. He was inserting himself into Riel.
For a half a second, I was waiting for you to say T. And then I realized, yeah, it's just we're going to stop at Real. There'll be no T. But tell me, and don't Google, and I know the people out there who might be Googling or already know, we'll fail this trivia question, but who was Bob Dole's running mate? Who was Dukakis' running mate? You know, who were the running mates of the losers who didn't get involved in some sordid scandal or who were not already in public life or public service? And why don't we remember them? Why is Sarah Palin being held up and brought up as the voice for the right when she was so wrong? And everyone should acknowledge that she was so wrong. Every time she opened her mouth, a snow boot fell out of it. She had her foot in her mouth so much, and she still keeps doing it, and they keep using her as relevant. I don't understand it. You either go quiet for 2 years and then bubble up to run your own election, as John Edwards tried.
Did we ever hear anything from Geraldine Ferraro?
Yeah, well, Geraldine Ferraro was already a congressperson. So she stayed relevant from a congressional standpoint, but she didn't become the voice of idiocy. She wasn't gone to for soundbite from then on. So Geraldine Ferraro was Mondale's running mate, right?
I don't know. I don't think I was born yet.
Oh, here we go. But I honestly don't remember who was who was Dukakis' running mate. I don't remember who was Bob Dole's running mate. I just don't understand why, for the life of me, when you're a political party that's, and I know this whole thing goes in cycles, but the Republican Party right now is hanging on by a fingernail.
But, you know, it wouldn't be so bad if she had an IQ above 69.
I think you're being generous because you left the dot out of that number. Because it should be 6.9. I honestly believe my 13-year-old, soon to be 13-year-old child, has a better grasp on everything going on politically than Sarah Palin does. She's still being spoon-fed talking points, and she gets those wrong. But I would think at this point, Fox News and the RNC and the national leaders of the Republican Party would stop putting Sarah Palin in front of a mic and a camera and start looking for, hate to say it, people like Michael Steele, people like John Huntsman, people who speak reasonably and would make the rest of the world think, well, it's not Obama and the Democrats against the Washington Generals.
But didn't we call John Huntsman? Didn't we say it's...
Hello? Did I lose...
Oh, sorry. I said, didn't we say from the beginning that if the Republicans wanted to give Barack Obama a run for his money for this election, they would have ran Huntsman?
Exactly. And that just goes from a point. Realizing that they didn't run Huntsman, realizing that they ran Kane, Bachman, Perry?
Gingrich and Man on Dog.
Right. Realizing how that put them even further behind the eight ball, you would think they would start saying, okay, the other stuff didn't work at all, so we've really got to stop propping up the idiot crew in the soundbite babies and get some legitimate, serious, can talk about our issues and show deference and respect to the office, if not the man, and try to appeal to those people who we've lost. It came out today that, and again, I hate to toot my own horn, because if I could toot my own horn, I would really be throwing dollar bills at myself before I took a shower. But it came out today that...
You are officially retarded.
It came out today that one of the largest demographic that was lost to the Republicans in this cycle, 2012 over 2008, was white men, white males.
Yep. And you and I talked about that, because remember,
exactly.
I had the anecdote out of South Carolina or North Carolina where a white colleague of mine was not voting for Romney, neither was his neighbors, and it was based on social issues.
Exactly. And it wasn't so much that they were for Obama, but they just couldn't pull the trigger. Use my analogy. They couldn't pull the knob. They couldn't get themselves, convince themselves to vote for Romney. So they stayed home. And they failed. And I don't want the Republicans to catch a clue as to what to do. But I honestly believe this country works better with a two-party system. The whole idea of democracy works better with a two-party system. But I want Republicans to come to the forefront again with some intelligent ideas so that I can legitimately say, you know what, he makes a good point, or she makes a good point. She may have an idea that can grow into something that I can support. You know,
so real quick, speaking of intelligent, can I have a moment of motherly pride? Just a small moment.
Sure.
My eldest baby brought home 4 A's and 2 B's, and my middle baby brought home two A's and 3 B's, and one that's probably going to be an A. And my baby has all 4s, which is the highest you can get, and a couple 3s. So I just wanted to have some motherly pride.
Well, congratulations to your children. I'm glad to see that the father's genes are prominent in in their upbringing.
I beg your pardon.
Just,
whatever, Yale.
I don't have any idea what my son's grades are at this point. I'm sure I'll find out soon. But I know he is knocking the books right off the shelf and then picking them back up and stacking them the way they're supposed to be. But that's great, Kamal. That's great. I mean, we joking kid, but there, you know, there's a lot to be said about education being important to what we do. They're getting it.
And you know how hard I work trying to get these kids the best education I can on the public's dime.
Yeah, and I understand. Well, first, baby girl, you know I love baby girl because she can count between difference between 11 and 12 instantly, just like Rain Man.
Instantly. Right. And we had chicken nuggets last week, and she counted. She was like, phew, I'm so glad they gave me 10. Because there was going to be repercussions and consequences if they hadn't.
America, I'm here to tell you. You can't throw 9 nuggets down in a box and call it ten and not be called out on the carpet by Kamal's baby girl. She knows her nugget mm-hmm. count.
She does, and she will call you out. And
she bet not never come home with anything less than an A in math.
Right.
Because if she does,
if she has to count chicken nuggets, it'll be an A+.
But I know Kamal. I know if she doesn't get an A in math, it ain't the baby's fault. Kamal's going to go up to the school and check calculators, computers, and teachers because her baby can count.
That's right. My baby can count her chicken nuggets. And we'll tell you, you know what? Clearly you don't like your job very well, do you?
Right.
I don't know where she gets that from.
Must be from watching zombie movies.
She's not allowed to do that.
So what we're going to do is we're going to have her get. I'm going to pay for her ticket to come to the East Coast and go to Washington before Christmas and solve this fiscal cliff crisis that we're facing.
Well, you know what she told me last year? She says, "Mommy, the government needs a new job." She was through with them the last time they pulled this mess.
And she's not wrong. She's so not wrong.
That's the kicker. She's not wrong. She gets it. People don't even believe me when I tell them the political thought that comes out of this little girl. But she gets it.
And we get it. We understand. It's just frustrating. It's frustrating that the art of negotiation can't start in the middle. It has to start on extremes on both sides. The Democrat and the president are asking for pie in the sky on their side, the Republican Party, the Congress, Speaker of the House, they're asking for pie in the sky on their side.
But doesn't PBL kind of have to, because last time negotiations didn't go that well for him because he came out the gate wanting to work with them and compromise. So
I'm not saying it's not justified, but this is where we are today behind that.
It's a shame that this is where we're at.
And what they can't grasp is elections have consequences, and he's been elected twice on the strength of this is what America is voting for. Higher taxes on the rich who can afford it and tax break for us that can't. So it's going to get ugly. It's going to come down to the wire. It always does. But these fools need to catch a clue, read results, understand where we're coming from, where America wants the country to go. Get together, get in the room, throw paper balls at each other, talk about each other's mamas and wives, do whatever is necessary. But come January 1, America itself has to start smart as much. I'll show you that I'm winning. So come on.
All right, America.
Love you much.
Love you much. Bye, Patrick.
I'm sure Patrick is now wiping himself down because you made him feel violated.
Make sure he's calling you, Patrick.
We'll catch y'all next week. Keep
all
listening.
Right.
Thank you very much, America.
Thanks for listening. Bye, America.
Bye, America.